Chevrolet.
Good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, and for the next 2 hours, we're going to talk about cars and motorhomes and tires and oil, and my shop said this, and my shop said that, and my brother said this, and my brother said that, all that kind of stuff is what we're going to be doing, and you're welcome to join us anytime you want. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, and we'll get you in, and we'll do the very best we can in answering your questions and helping you out. For the next 2 hours, when we talk about cars, we're going to touch on a lot of different subjects, and certainly your subject or your car, but there's lots of times that there's an argument. And I've been on radio, local radio, and in other cities since 1988, and it's always going to be a little contentious because there's always two and oftentimes three and four sides of a particular car issue. And it has lots to do with the age of the people that are arguing the issue the older versus the younger. And then it had a lot to do with what our dads did and our grandpas did. And that's kind of the things we have to deal with. The idea that your engine is going to have to run on premium, or there's a noticeable difference on premium gasoline, the extra 10 to 20, 30 cents a gallon for premium, and or the idea that I make fun of because it's not true, is your car will love you more and last longer if you feed it premium gas versus regular. Of course, gas issues at this particular point, with gas prices being the $5 area, most everybody's going to trim back down to regular, but in reality, there are very few cars out there. Nothing I have owned or have ever owned that necessitated I put premium in them. I'll give you the difference. The regular one molecule ignites 10, and 10 ignite 100, and 100 ignite 1,000. The burn is pretty fast. The explosion is like popping a balloon. Boom. That's what it's like. In an exaggerated way, premium gasoline is one molecule ignites two ignite four ignite six ignite eight. The burn is slower. So it is true that there's more push on the piston, but we're talking about millionths of a second. So if we have 3 millionths of a second more push on the piston, you're not going to know it. And I've never found anybody, and I've challenged people all the time on this, and it's fun to do. They have a 50-50 chance of guessing which kind of gas you put in their vehicle, but if from a consistency point of view, they can't nail it every time. I can't. I don't know anybody that can. Now, there's probably one car out of a million out there in Never Never Land that absolutely the owner says, I can tell the difference. I believe you. There are some hot rods that have been built where premium and regular are easily distinguishable. But when we're talking about the mainstream cars that are in the Walmart parking lot every day, or in Fifth Avenue parking lot, or North Scottsdale, it doesn't make any difference. You're not going to be able to tell the difference. You're not going to be able to tell the difference consistently. And so it's up to you. If it makes you feel better and you think your car loves you more because you give it premium instead of regular, go ahead. But in reality, my family, my wife and I have been married 48 years. We've had a supercharged Jaguar. We've had twin-turboed Corvettes. We've had a blower on a Camaro. We have diesels. We have all kinds of vehicles and lots of hot rod vehicles. And I'm unable to tell the difference in any of them, and I run the test myself, so that I can speak to you and tell you, you can't tell the difference. But again, it's a 50-50 chance if you guess, and that's okay with me. You can guess, but it's just really a matter of how long the fuel burns. The push on the piston in milliseconds of time is a little bit longer on premium than regular. But with cars since 1981 that had computers that control fuel and spark and timing. And so now, all of a sudden, the computer is programmed for this window of operation. So if you're down here on the very bottom, on the left side of the graph, And the computer goes, well, there's a lot of fuel coming out of the tailpipe, so he's wasting a lot of fuel. Let me advance the timing a little bit. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I see his RPM come up a little bit. I see his speed come up a little bit. Yeah, okay, well, I'm going to go ahead and advance the timing because he's not taking advantage of everything. Oh, just a minute. The knock sensor just told me that I had gone too far with the timing, so I'll back it off a degree or two. How do you like that, Mr. Knock Sensor? Yeah, okay, good. Everything I just said happens in 1/10 of a second. And so it's just real fast. So the car has parameters and the computer has parameters that keep you within the parameters. It's not going to let you knock on the engine for a very long time. It's going to retard the timing until the knock goes away. You'll probably not even know that. You'll probably never know that. But that's how a computer works, and it's a pretty sophisticated thing. And obviously, from the time we started back in the, when I was working on cars as a kid in the 60s and the 70s, there was no computers. You could manually adjust the timing until it pinged, rattled. Those are synonymous words. And then back it off a degree and lock it down there. Hopefully, the starter wouldn't drag when it's hot. Otherwise, the starter goes... That's called dragging the starter because there's too much timing. To verify that there's too much timing, pull the coil wire out of it. And then you crank it over. You put the coil wire back in. Okay, we're done. That's how it all began. So with computers and today's computers compared to 1981 when we first came out with computers is the difference between, you know, an abacus and a solar nuclear powered calculator in some big warehouse in New York City. It's just a big difference. And we have a caller. Who might that be, Gil?
Say hello to Bob.
Bob, good morning.
Hi, Mark.
Hi.
I'm trying to maximize my miles per gallon. So if my tires are rated on the sidewall at 51 PSI, and I inflate them cold to 51 PSI, I don't care about ride quality, but I know I'm going to get shorter tire life because I'm going to wear out my tires right in the center because I'm going to have like that bead in the middle of the tire that's going to wear out prematurely. But I'm going to get maximum miles per gallon.
Okay. So
what do you think?
Well, I think you're wrong about wearing out the middle. I know that.
Do you?
Well, I don't know. I see 100 tires a day. Do you?
I try to watch tires when I see them. I had a set of tires one time that I inflated, like, to the max. And then the cord started wearing through, like, right in the center, like, right around the center of the tire.
Well, I don't know what to tell you. I mean, we can argue this as much as you want, but I haven't seen a tire that's wore, and obviously in the center of the tire, in years and years and years and years and years. And another thing, too, is if your hypothesis is right, Bob, then one big fat guy in the back seat of a car is going to make the difference in the rear alignment of the rear independent suspension, and that's going to cause the tire to wear on the inside as opposed to the outside. We have all these variables on how much stuff is in the trunk, how many people are in the car, and all that kind of stuff. The only thing I'm seeing on tire wear is outside edge on the front end. That's because the tire's turning left and right. And when you see the outside edge wear, then you rotate the tires. That's kind of the key to rotate the tires. And I also have a fleet of vehicles that numbers more than 40, and I run every single one at maximum cold pressure. And I don't see what you see. I don't see what you see in the parking lots. So I guess my message to you is your bicycle and your motorcycle gets better fuel economy, and it's easier to pedal a bicycle with fully inflated tires. And I've been telling people that for a very long time, and it is true. You can't argue with the fact that fully inflated tires give you better fuel economy. They also bounce through off curbs a lot better than they do if they're half flat, and they bounce through potholes in and out a lot better than if they're half flat. So there's all these benefits, plus the tire itself runs cooler at full inflation. So full inflation is how I do it. If you have three choices. You can use the sticker on the car, on the door, where it gives you the prescribed inflation. You can use the maximum inflation or something in between. But the sticker on the car says, in order for this tire to carry the weight it's designed in the car to hold, then it needs to be at 30 pounds. Well, if it's a 35-pound tire, you can still put it at 35. Does that all make sense?
Right, it does. Except when I went to discount and I said I wanted my tires inflated to 51, because they said...
2 minutes.
They said it was too dangerous. To the max tire, you know, on the side, 51 pounds.
Yeah.
They said they wouldn't do it.
Yeah. Well, I can answer that. I work for Discount Tire. We can't control everybody who works there in all the different states. And I don't know why they would say that, but we don't teach. I don't participate in teaching Discount Tire staff people about what to say and what not to say. But they're hiring me as their tire expert many times in cases that involve litigation. And I have been certified by every court that I've ever been in front of as an expert in that area. So I can't explain why Walmart employees would say it or this employee would say it or whatever. I don't know. But there's nothing against the law, and it's not against industry standards for us to deviate from two numbers, the maximum inflation
1 minute.
And the recommended inflation. There's nothing to allow us to deviate. So it's more than likely that young man's father had an idea that he passed down to him, or he talked to another guy in the shop, and they came to that conclusion. I don't know. I can't possibly answer the question. I can just argue with it unemotionally. Anyway, Bob, thanks very much. 602-508-0960. If you have a car question or a car problem, it can be about engine oil as well, the difference between regular oil, semi-synthetic oil, and synthetic oil, and then the weights and all that kind of stuff. We have oil today that has the consistency of water when it's cold, which is what you want your oil to be. You want it to have the consistency of water because you don't want it to have the consistency of frosting or peanut butter. It's hard to pump peanut butter through your engine on a cold morning. So that's why we have variable viscosity oils. So we have a 520. And what that means is it flows like a 5 weight when it's cold, and it flows like a 20 weight when it's hot. But we're talking about it flows like a 0 weight or a 5 weight when it's cold. So we're using the properties of oil. The oil itself does change viscosity, and it does change from liquid to frosting, but it still provides the protection, and that's kind of a hard thing to get. But anyway, 602-508-0960. Welcome back, everybody. 21 minutes after the hour, 10 o'clock, and we're going to tell you real quick about Action Auto Repair at I-17 and Deer Valley Road. Tom and I have been friends since 1983. I have all the faith in the world in his ability to fix cars, diagnose cars, correctly verify the diagnosis and the fix the problem. All that kind of stuff is well within his area of expertise. So if you live anywhere near at all of I-17 and Deer Valley and you don't have a repair shop, then may I suggest that you try Action Auto Repair, northwest corner of Deer Valley and I-17. I'm looking at my clock and all that kind of stuff, and so you have to forgive me. Let's go to the phone. Shannon, ladies first, how can I help you?
Oh, that's very sweet of you. I'm just calling because you referred me to a shop about a year ago, and they were very good, and then they sold out to another company, and they don't have a mechanic available on Saturdays, and I work Monday through Friday. So I am in Sun City off of 99th Avenue, 99th Avenue and Union Hills. Is there another shop that you can recommend that I can go to that has a mechanic available on Saturdays?
Okay. I think you were talking about S&S Tire because they did sell.
Yes.
Okay. Okay.
Yes.
Auto Dynamics, 99th and Grand. Auto Dynamics. And Chuck Nida and I have been friends since the 60s.
since the 60s.
Since the 60s.
How young are you?
I was 42 the other day, but I may have made a mistake in my addition and subtraction of my birthday and my date of birth. It's Auto Dynamics. He's been around a long time. Chuck Nyday owns it, and he's been around a very long time. And they are on our approved repair shop lists, and so I would suggest that you call them and see if you can, you know, be a regular on Saturdays. And most of us make that capability available.
Yeah, because all I could get done this past last Saturday was an oil change, and my tires rotated. They don't do transmission fluid, blah blah blah. Anyway, so do you by chance have their number, or do I have to look them up? Auto Dynamics.
I don't have it handy right now. Because you picture a pilot with about 4,000 pieces of paper in front of him, and so I don't even know where my pen's at right now. But anyway, just try Auto Dynamics in that. If not, do you work somewhere? I mean, what geographically do you work?
Well, I work off 43rd Avenue, Buckeye Road, but I live off of pretty much 99th Avenue in Union Hills.
Okay. Well, you can go to Mark Salem and look at the best car repair shops list and see if there's a shop that's close to you at work. A lot of us, a lot of shops.
Oh, no, I won't do that because if I'm going to do it, I have to take it down and drop it off for the weekend. I work Monday through Friday.
Okay. All right. Well, good luck. Thank you very much, Shannon. Thank you very much, Bobby.
Thank you for your time, Mark.
You're welcome, ma'am. Bobby, you'll be up next. How can I help you?
I was trying to take the wheels, front wheels off of my 2009 Camry and discovered that every lug nut has been rounded off. It requires a 21 millimeter socket and can't get that on there. So I ended up going with a 22 millimeter, had to tap it on with a hammer. Was able to finally get the lug nuts off. They weren't over-tightened, but it was really tough getting them off. Anyway, the previous, I had two tires put on a few weeks ago, and the tire place that did it must have been the one that ruined my lug nuts. Do you have any recommendation on how I could handle that?
Yeah. I think, I don't think they're going to like being in on the tail end of the deal. And so I'm going to pretend like I'm the shop owner, and let me just ask you this question, or maybe more. What was it that after we did the tires that you felt like you needed to do? What were you trying to accomplish afterwards? Just rotate them?
Oh, I was just taking them off to do a brake job.
Okay.
You know, rotors and pads that I do myself, you know.
Okay, and that's fine. That's a good answer. That's the right answer. So that explains why you tried to take them off and why you didn't take it back to them, because they're a tire store and they don't do brakes. Saying you do your own brake jobs,
right.
That's fine. That's a good answer. So let me ask you a question. Did these lug nuts have like a chrome cover over the top of them?
Yeah, they did, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I'm going to tell you that I believe that you just happened to be the person that had to do what you did. Those lug nuts that have a chrome cover on them, there's about three different sockets that will fit those. And the problem is that they all get beat up, and then what happens, as you well know, the cover comes off, and now you're going to have to adapt some metric or American six-sided or 12-sided socket to that, and you're going to have to beat it on with a hammer and take them all off. This is what we do. And we don't sell those. And the minute we see those, we'll notify the customer that any further problems is going to be yours, not ours. So in your particular case, I think I would go back to them and just say, I was getting ready to do some brakes and I had a tough time and the socket I normally use didn't work. And I ended up having to take the covers off of them because they had been chewed up pretty bad. Is there any way that we could come to an agreement about putting five new lug nuts on either side, or do you have those in stock, and can maybe we split the cost or something like that?
Yeah.
I think he'd jump at the chance to say, pull your car in, we'll pay for everything. Zip five, here's five new ones, here's five new ones. Thank you, shake your hand, and goodbye. I think he'll jump at the chance to be your hero.
Okay.
2 minutes.
Well, that's good advice. I just wonder why they didn't tell me after I left that.
Well, it's
lug nuts are gonzo. I don't even think they fully tightened them. We're able to fully tighten them, but I'm kind of guessing. But
I don't know, and you don't know, and yeah. You know, when you have 30, 40, 50, 60 employees, it really is a very difficult job to get everybody to do the same thing and not promote, but to require or to mandate that you do this when this is what you see. And unfortunately, my employees one of my guys the other day left the lug nuts loose on a wheel, and through the grace of God, the people recognized it a block away before the wheel came off and caused a calamity and damaged the fender and all that other kind of stuff. So we all make mistakes.
Yeah.
So I think you just put it past you and go see if he'll participate in putting you back
one
together.
Minute.
All right, that's good. Just one other question about, do you still have that transmission vendor on your list that you have been recommending for a long time?
No, I don't have any.
I don't want to mention their name.
Yeah, I don't have any transmission shops that I'm recommending right now. I'm having a tough time finding a transmission that does public work. There's some wholesale guys out there that won't do public work. And so I'm having a tough time. But no, I don't have any transmission shops other than Automatic Transmission Exchange on Washington. I talk about
that's
him.
That's the one.
Okay.
That's the one I'm thinking of.
Yeah.
You're still on your list.
He's the only transmission shop on my list, and he does a good job. And Phil's been around since Jesus was a baby. So, I mean, he came through the first automatics all the way to the new 10-speed electronically controlled ones. So he's got what it takes. But I got to run. But David and Kevin, you stay right there. I'll be back. Welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and we're here talking about car repair and stuff like that. And you're welcome to join us, 602-508-0960. But we have two guys that have waited through the break. So David and Kevin, stay right there, because David, you're first. How can I help you today, David?
Yeah, I have a curiosity question more than anything else. I called the service writer that I've had at this one dealership for a while for my 2016 Kia Soul. The brakes, it's my wife's car, so I don't drive it that often, but the brakes seemed a little soft, a little mushy. And so I called him and said, you know, I'd like to bring it in, have you look at it, just because it's my wife's car. And he told me, he says, when you're going down your street, make sure there's nobody in and around you, and jam on the brakes a couple times, and that should firm everything up. And lo and behold, I did it three times, and all of a sudden that pedal's nice and firm, doesn't have nearly the flow on it before, you know, the push on it. And I was curious why that would work. I remember the old days backing up and doing it, you know, to tighten up your drum. But I didn't know that doing that with today for a mushy brake pedal.
Okay. The mushy brake pedal, were you saying that when you push the brake pedal, that where it ultimately stopped changed places?
Yeah, you push it and the car would stop, and then, I'm sitting at a light in my Volvo, and it stays steady. But it would slowly maybe give a little bit, or if I kind of burped it, moved my foot a little bit, it would push in a little bit further.
Okay. Well,
it's told me to drive it. But.
Okay. It's kind of a matter of semantics. If you push the pedal and it doesn't come to a firm stop and stay there during the duration of the light, then the master cylinder is bypassing, or you have a fluid leak somewhere that's not going to be fixed by you abusing the brakes. Okay? Number two,
okay.
If you have air in the system, then every time you hit the brake pedal, it'll get firm in a different location, and you're not going to fix that by roughhousing the brakes. If you have a leak...
Okay, that's why I'm curious.
I can't explain it. I can't explain why what you did fix something, because right now I don't think he knows what you were talking about as far as it fixing, because again, the brake pedal should be the same every time. And when you say it's mushy, does that mean it stops in different places? And if that's the case, you either have air in the system or you have a master cylinder bypassing. And when you rough house the brakes, the master cylinder doesn't self-correct. So I can't really explain it. But let me ask you this. Did you check the brake fluid level?
No, I did not. I look at that thing and go, I don't get inside there.
Okay.
Volvo, I know where the parts are.
Okay. Sometimes it's a clear, it's an opaque plastic reservoir, and it'll have a low and a high mark, and you'll be able to see the fluid level. And so if that's the case, here's what I want you to do. If there's a problem, I want you, when you come to a stop, after you've come to a stop, I want you to apply extra pressure on the brake pedal through the duration of the red light and pay attention to where the pedal gets firm. You're actually pushing extra hard on the pedal. You're not going to hurt anything. If you find intermittently that the pedal starts to fade away, then that master cylinder is bypassing, and you need to have that addressed, which is replace the master cylinder and flush the brake system out. But other than that, I can't answer your question, because it doesn't. It's not a matter of you cleaning the rust off the road, and it's not a matter of you adjusting the brakes to where they weren't before, because you can't do that in a forward motion. So there's all these moving parts. So I can't explain it, but I'm happy that it seemed to work for you, and that's a good thing. But I just can't explain it. I'm sorry. Anyway, thank you, David. Kevin, you're up next. How can I help you?
Yeah, thanks for your program, Mark. I've got a radiator question. I've got a 99 7.3 1 ton. It's the original radiator, and my question is, you know, how much longevity do they actually have? I'm beginning to see something when I'm towing that it doesn't overheat, but it raised a few times going up north, meaning to Flagstaff. That I've never seen before. Didn't overheat, just raised a little bit, and I didn't know if I was, you know, horsing the truck a little too much, or, you know, or something's going on with the radiator. Got a good T-stat and water pump.
Okay. Is your 7.3 in an excursion or a truck?
It's a truck, yeah,
okay.
One ton.
F-350. And I want the temperature gauge on that to run between half and three quarters, maybe a little less than half, but upwards towards three quarters, depending on the load you're carrying. Is that the range you're normally at, one way or the other?
Well, normally it doesn't even move. You know, it's at its regular warm-up position, which would be, you know, just over the first mark.
Okay.
From cold.
Okay, so that's kind of the quarter mark.
It doesn't even get to half.
Okay. Okay, well, I'm even if everything was fine, I have no problem with you with what you told me. I you know, the red zone is a long way away, and just because the needle moved and so forth and so on, if it moved twice the needle width or something like that, no one cares. It's okay. But I think what you should do is take the radiator cap off in the morning and start it up and have your wife or somebody hold the idle up and see if you've got flow across the top of the radiator. If you have flow across the top of the radiator, the thermostat's stuck open because you're not supposed to be moving it. You ripple the water cold. You'll see the water ripple just from the vibration of the diesel engine and or the gas engine. But in reality, it's not flowing. It's not moving. But if the thermostat sticks open, then you'll see movement first thing in the morning, and then I would put a 180, 185 thermostat in it. Let me tell you something. That motor's going to like it a lot better if you run that thing closer to half. And between half and three quarter, it'll like it a lot better. It'll last a lot longer. Everything is better. The oil likes it better. The cooling system likes it better. The combustion likes it better. So the idea that quarter on the gauge on your Ford or Chevy or Dodge is an acceptable number is just not. So we want it to run between half and three quarters on gauges.
Okay, it's never done that on this truck. You know. And I actually had a water pump go out on one. And yeah, that was a bit, you know, bang, it went up, changed it out. But this just seems to be a, you know, it just seems to be climbing on those pulls, which it never did before. And I thought, maybe I don't see a leak in my radiator, but I thought, it's a 22-year-old radiator. So I didn't know, you know, if maybe I'm looking at time to get rid of it or.
Okay, let me change the question then. Mark, I have a 22-year-old radiator in my 7.3 Ford, and what's going to be the symptoms of when I need to change it? And my answer is going to be is when it gets over 3/4 most of the time on highway speeds. On highway speeds, it gets past 3/4. That's time to change it because it's getting plugged up. Or if you get it and it's leaking and you're adding water to it and the radiator's coming from, then that's obvious, you do that. But when the radiator plugs up, then it's going to start bringing the temperature up a drastic amount. Because when you're doing 40 miles an hour, the water lollygags through the radiator. But when you're doing 70 miles an hour, and I know your Ford's never done that fast, but that's a story for another time, and I'm teasing you. At 70 miles an hour, we're running water through that radiator at a good clip, and if it's half plugged up, then the water goes through so fast it doesn't dissipate its heat, which causes a pretty dramatic rise in temperature on the gauge. You don't have that. All you're saying is I'm up a little higher than I was before. Does that mean I need to do something with the radiator? And the answer to that is no. That's not good enough. That's not good enough at all. Anyway, I got to run. Thank you very much. Corky, you stay there. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. 45 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, and we're going to do just like we promised. We're going straight to Corky. Corky, thank you for holding as long as you did. How can I help you?
Yes, Mark. I have a 2004 Montana van. I just had the oil changed. I went to a house, stopped the car, and it would not crank. Well, let me back up. It would not start. It was cranking like a big dog. Then all of a sudden, I pushed on the gas pedal, and it started. I drove it home, let it idle for a while. I could take the gas pedal and go to like 3,600 RPMs, and as soon as it went past that, it dropped back. I tried it again. It would not go to full RPMs. I stopped it, went out to get it started again, it wouldn't start. So I went down and got some starting fluid, and put it into the intake, and it started. And it did the same thing. It ran for 20 minutes without stopping. So I'm trying to think, is it possible a fuel pump pressure regulator is bad?
No. You have a fuel starvation problem. There's no question about that. When it goes up to 1,600 pounds and then at 1,700 pounds it falls on its face, but it starts and runs below that, that's a fuel starvation problem. So you've got a restriction. I can't explain why when you tap the gas pedal, something changed. I can't explain that. But I can tell you what I'd be doing. I'd be pulling the fuel filter out of it. I would have the new one in my hand. I would blow through the old one, and I'd blow through the new one. And I think that'll answer your question.
Well, that's something I was thinking of. So,
yeah.
Okay, well.
It's not the fuel pump. Think about this. The fuel pump, you're getting good pressure. You're getting 1,300, 1,400, 1,500 RPM. It's providing fuel. It's just a substandard amount of fuel. So the fuel pump's working and it's buzzing. And so that's good. It's just not sufficient to go 70 miles an hour. And it had nothing to do, I can't explain why it had anything to do with that, but the fuel pressure regulator does this. When you're driving down the road 70 miles an hour, the fuel pressure regulator is regulating the fuel pressure, let's pretend at 50 pounds, on and off, on and off. When you stuff your throttle to the floor, the fuel pump pressure drops, and the fuel pump pressure regulator shuts off the return to boost the pressure. It wants to give you 50 all the time, but because you just jammed the throttle to the floor and you went from 50 to 30, then we shut off the return, boom, bring that pressure back up to 50, and off we go. So you don't have any symptoms for the fuel pressure regulator, but you have symptoms for a bad fuel filter.
Okay, that sounds good. Thank you much.
All right, you bet. And folks, that's a good example of just giving us the facts. It's not important what the guy on the internet said, and it's not important what the guy at the auto parts store said, but I start the car and it runs, and I have a cap on the RPM that I never had before, and intermittently it doesn't do this or it doesn't do that. That's the kind of on and off and talk we have when we talk about cars. That's what you should have at the front counter of your auto repair garage. If you don't have a garage that you love, go to MarkSalem.com. MarkSalem.com. Mark with a K. Salem like the cigarette. MarkSalem.com. And look at our list of good shops there. And these guys have been friends of mine for 20, 30, 40 years. I know that they're not going to disappear tomorrow. They all have insurance on your car when they're working on it. They all know the difference between right and wrong. Most of them, with the exception of one, has a family that loves the heck out of him, and that's Tom Blackwell, and I'll talk about him in a minute. And these guys have proven time and time and time again that they can fix your car. But the worst kind of front counter scenario is somebody that comes in and says, I've got a problem with the transmission, and it's going to be the torque converter, and I want you to replace the converter. And you're just shaking your head because you're saying to yourself, he's got a vibration, he's been on the internet, he's been talking to Mr. Google, and somebody in Texas who was a former convict and just got out of prison for bank fraud and lying and is now telling him how to fix his car in Arizona. It just doesn't make any sense. So the give and take on the symptoms is what's really, really important. Gil, who's next?
Brian is next.
Brian, good morning. How can I help you?
Hello there.
Hi.
I have a 2019 F-150 I just bought 2 months ago, used. It has 28,000 miles on it.
Okay.
At low RPMs, it rattles like crazy, like the lifters are rattling. So I took it back to the dealership. They said probably cam sensors, I believe. They kept it for a week. They texted me just this morning, said, come pick it up. We replaced the intake manifold because it had a broken part. I drove it away 15 minutes ago. It still has a rattle at low RPM.
Okay. What motors it got in it?
The gas 5.0, I believe it is.
Okay. There's all kinds of problems with all kinds of cars, so I'm not going to be picking on Ford. There's Chevys out there. We got 6 liters that are spitting camshafts and lifters out the tailpipe. We got all kinds of problems that have a lot to do with lubrication, have a lot to do with oil change intervals, has a lot to do with the quality of the oil you're putting in your engine and stuff like that. This is an easy one. I can't fix your car, but you're going to take it back and you're going to and be real nice, and you're going to say, thank you for your effort. It worked perfectly for a short period of time, but it's back up to that again. Could you take another look at it? And then you can kind of squeeze in that conversation if you want. Is hopefully this is just a kind of a continuation of the first repair order. Otherwise, you're saying I don't want to pay a checkout fee again.
Yeah, I haven't had to pay anything. That's good because it's under warranty. But it's odd that, I mean, I'll take off. I'll be going 28, 30 miles an hour. It'll be in fifth gear at 1,000 RPM, and the engine's just chattering like crazy.
Okay. What happens if you drop it down a gear manually? If you drop it down a gear?
Yeah, it sounds
okay.
Sounds great. I can do it manually and roll it up to 2,500, 3,000 RPM, and it's just like my last pickup. Runs great.
Okay. Then what? Let me make a stab at this. So when you're driving down the road and you're in high gear and you just throttle lightly, it sounds like it's pinging. It sounds like it's rattling. But the minute I go into my throttle kind of deep, the rattle goes away. How am I doing?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, the RPMs go right up and it sounds great.
Okay. That's how I want you to explain it to them. This is how to duplicate it. And, you know, it wouldn't be bad to take a piece of paper, type it in big letters, and tape it to the driver, or tape it to the dashboard by the radio for the guy that's going to get the car. This is how you make it happen. I want you to pretend there's a raw egg on the accelerator pedal, and I want you to, you're at a traffic light, and I want you to accelerate oh so gentle, and I want you to back off and do about 35, 45 miles an hour. And listen to the rattle. Now, the rattle could be a lifter problem. It could be an oil delivery problem. It could be a variable valve timing problem. And it also could be an exhaust leak. So it just depends. Because it's hard to tell the tick of an exhaust leak versus the tick of a lifter. So you if it's under warranty, you're home free. It's just, and then you can say, would you like me to take someone for a ride? Because I can demonstrate it and then wink at him and say, I will not have your guy for longer than 20 minutes, I promise.
All right. I'll do that.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Good luck to you. Why do you say that about how long you have your driver? Every single shop owner in the world has called a technician off the floor and said, go with Mrs. Jones or Mr. Jones, and he's got a problem that he can duplicate, and they'll bring my technician back an hour and a half later. Now, the technician doesn't know what to do in the car, but he goes, I'm going to go down this way, and I remember going over on 48th Street, and it did it over there. Let's go over there. Oh, nope. Let's go over to East Mesa, and my mother lives there, and it does it around her house. That happens a lot. And so when I throw this stuff at you in a kind of in a learning mode, there's method to my madness, because this is what happens to guys that own shops. And I've been in the shop, auto repair. I worked at a gas station when I was a junior in high school. Ken's Broadway Shell at Broadway and Priest in Tempe. I worked there. Then I came out of there and I worked in a variety of other garages. Then I became a policeman for the 70s. And then in 1979, I opened up a mobile station. And then from mobile, then I went to Tempe, to Guadalupe and McClintock, and then to Warner I-10. So I've been working on cars for a long time. And I know that the bosses, they just hate it when someone wants to take a technician for a ride. And the first question that most of us have learned to ask is, can you make it happen? And most of the time, if I'm not busy, I'm going with you for riding. Because I can't have you take a technician that, you know, for a 30, 40, 50 minute ride until you can make it happen. And that's not good efficient time of your technicians in a drive like that where there's no compensation on the horizon. So nevertheless, that's how it works. 602-508-0960. Now it's 55 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. We're going to go into news here pretty quick, and when we do, at 3 or 4 minutes after the hour, we're going to go back with another hour. The lines are wide open. If you'd like to get a line, now's the time. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. One more time, 602-508-0960, because it's 960 the Patriot. And Gil will answer the phone, and he's going to say, do you want to talk to Mark? And if you want, you can mess with Gil, and you can say, no, I just want to talk dirty to somebody. Are you the guy that listens to people talk dirty to them? And he's talking in my ear right now, and he's using bad words. But Gil's the one that makes me look sound like I'm real professional, because he's the one that watches me. He's the one that talks to in my ears. You can't hear him. Sometimes he says bad words in my ears. Sometimes he says, you've talked to this person long enough. Or sometimes he says, you need to go have another cup of coffee and stop snoring on the air. Stuff like that. But that's what happens behind the scenes. Gil and I have been together. I've been with KKNT for 10 years, 11 years, as a matter of fact. And Gil and I have been together for a very long time. We've met one another face-to-face maybe 5 times. But I know his voice, and he knows my voice, and I know what he likes, and he knows what I like, and I know what he doesn't like, and he knows what I don't like. But the two of us make the show. So it's just not Mark Salem. There's 3 people that make this show what it is. There's Mark Salem and Gil and you, the consumer, the customer, the caller. So, again, we got 6 lines open. Say hello to Gil when you get there, and you can extend your condolences for him having to work with Mark Salem all these years. And he'll just laugh.
Oh, it hasn't been that bad, Mark.
Oh, gosh. Your board op is what we call the person that runs the show. I'm actually in Payson right now. We are connected high-tech with a whole bunch of high-tech stuff. Well, I'm a car mechanic, but the thing in front of me, there's a board, a soundboard, and then there's a Comrex access. There's so many knobs and buttons in front of me, you can't believe it. If you wanted to play the worst joke on me in the world, you would get into my office in Payson, in my house, and you would turn all the knobs to the off position. And it may take me 7 years to get back where I'm at today. no one is allowed to touch anything, and I even take pictures of all the knobs so that I can have a backup, if so to speak. So anyway, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. My name's Mark Salem. Gil Estrada is the engineer, and he's the one that's directly responsible for this, the quality of this show, and more importantly, the technical aspect of this show, for us getting in and out in exactly when we should.
This was a paid program and was provided for information.
You're good, Mark.
Road 960. Now, once again, here's Mark.
Well, good afternoon, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, and we have another hour of fun and frivolity. I wish I could share with you what Gil and I discussed during the 5 minute top of the hour, bottom of the hour, or top of the hour on the front side and back side, but I can't. I can only tell you that you would be laughing, and we're not laughing at you. We're laughing with you because Gil won't admit it, but it's not an easy show to deal with Mark, because Mark has a bad habit of deviating from...
Not too often, Mark.
Deviating from protocol. So,
no, it's a good show to run.
He's just being nice. That's all. He's just being nice. And can they hear you saying that?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, good. I don't, you know, unless you're going to really counsel me and tell me that I need to be nicer, or if I used a bad word and you're going to have to, I'm going to have to use a favor for to have you remove the bad word, then that would be a good idea.
I can do that.
Okay. Did you have a caller for me?
I do have a caller for you, Ken, whenever you're ready.
Okay, I am ready. I'm not going to wait. Ken, make Ken wait any longer. Ken, the floor is yours.
Mark, I have a 2008 Jaguar XJ8. Has 147,000 miles on it. A reputable, what I present to be a reputable shop, identified a leaky timing cover, and they replaced the timing cover and seal, and you know, did all the things that it takes to do that. I guess you're more familiar with that than I am. First issue is that it cost me $2,400 for them to do that. And second issue is when I drove it away from the shop, I heard a flutter, kind of flutter rattle type of thing under coming from under the hood. After I drove it about 20 miles or so, flutter responded to acceleration. In other words, when I pressed on the pedal a little bit, it got a little bit louder, and about 2,000 RPM. And when I got up to about 3,000 RPM, it got louder. And then finally, when I got it back to my house, the engine light came on. So my question is twofold. One is that replacing a timing cover and seal and doing all the things that it takes to, reset the timing and this kind of thing for $2,400, is that a, seem to be a fair price? And secondly, do you have any opinion on what this flutter in this engine light might be?
Well, next time you call like this, I want you to say, right, I've got an 08 Jaguar XJ8 with 147,000 miles, and I just had this work done. Tell me what you think the parameters are of fixing this. And I was prepared for that before you gave your 2,400, and I was at 25 to 3,000. So that should answer your question. Mm-hmm. It's not an easy job. That Jaguar, is that the four-door XJ8? That's a supercharged one. Yes?
Right.
Okay. Well, if you ever want to sell that, call me up, okay? I'll tell you why. My wife had one of those, a silver one with the white leather interior, and I sold it, and she's never forgiven me. And so if it's really nice and you want to sell it, then give me a call. I'm not quite sure I'm going to sell it.
It's in near perfect condition from an interior standpoint. The exterior needs a little bit of, you know, touch up on the little dings on the paint. Other than that, the interior is perfect.
And just so other people understand what we're talking about, that has a V8 motor and it's got a blower on it, a supercharger on it. You're not really afraid of any cars at a traffic light if the lane ahead goes from 2 to 1, you're pretty sure you're going to get there first, yes?
Well, I usually don't drive it like that, but probably, yeah.
He's being nice, folks, because his wife's probably listening on the radio. But I think what has to happen is you just go back and tell them exactly what just happened. And then just say, call me and keep me up on what's going on. And please understand, I trust you, but don't spend any of my money without calling me first. And you're saying, that's an easy thing to say.
Yeah, okay. That's exactly what I plan to do. But I was just wondering if you had an opinion. When they do this, replace the seal, do they fiddle with the timing change or timing belt or anything like that? Or how does that work?
No. If they pull the cover, first of all, I don't know if they need to pull the cover. I don't know what was leaking. But the front seal is just the front, you know, the fan and the shroud and maybe even the radiators coming out so we can get our puller in there. And we can pull the harmonic balancer and the seals behind the harmonic balancer. So we don't even take the cover off the timing cover. So, but I don't know if he's talking about an oil leak around the outside of the timing cover or if it's coming from the front seal. Or did he go in to do the cover and he did the front? Go ahead.
Remove and reseal front timing cover.
Okay.
Replace main Craig crankshaft seal.
Okay, then he did both. He did the cover gasket and he did the crankshaft seal. But no, he did not mess with the timing.
Okay.
Yeah, there's no reason to take the timing chain off.
The job was delayed by a couple of days because he had to get a timing tool.
Okay, a timing tool.
Yeah.
Well, what is your does your invoice show a timing chain and tensioner?
No.
Okay.
That's what confused me. But why did he need a timing tool?
I don't know the answer to that.
Okay. The timing tool is a bunch of little devices and things to set the timing, right? I'm not familiar with what tool
is. I can't tell you what it is because I don't know what he's talking about, a timing tool. If you want to find top dead center, which is where you start from, many of us have devices that we put in the number one cylinder spark plug hole, and when the top of the piston comes up and we're measuring it in a thousandth of an inch, when the top of the piston comes up and starts to go down, then you go back up at a 2/1000th, and then that's the top dead center, and at that point, then you set the chain on there. So I can't answer your question. I don't know if he just didn't have a tool or whatever. I don't know the answer, but he if he was just replacing the timing cover, and he did the front seal on the crankshaft. I don't know why taking the timing chain would be something that he would have done. And besides that, if he would have taken the timing chain off and got it off a tooth, it would run so different than it did before. It would have a different idle, it'd have a different throttle, it'd have all kinds of noise. You would have known it within the first 150 feet of driving it that he's off a tooth on his timing chain. So
I'll bring it back. What they say, so.
Okay, now let me ask you a question. That's a job that should have done by somebody who works on Jaguars for a living. That's not a job for a brake shop. Okay? On a 1 to 10 scale, that's a number 8. On a 1 to 10 scale, I've got 10, 12, 14 technicians working for me, and there's about 5 of them that would get that car, and the rest of them wouldn't. Because the other guys are heavy line guys, alignment guys, diesel guys, or whatever. But this isn't an easy job. So just be careful about this. I would hate to think that you took it to a brake company place and they did this work. If that's the case, you made a mistake.
No, this is a shop. I mean, what I call you can eat off the floor type of repair shop. They work on BMW, Jags, foreign core type of situations, according to what I've been able to determine. This is the first time I've ever used them. But,
are they in North Scottsdale?
They're in Tempe, and their name sounds like a German kind of sounding name.
Okay.
So,
are they on McClintock?
Broadway.
Okay. I don't know. It's okay. We don't need to talk about it anymore because I was just going to kind of guess some generalities because I know a lot of the guys that do that. But I'm sitting here thinking out loud to myself is all the guys I know that do the Jaguars do a good job at the Jaguars, so there's no sense in me trying to guess the thing. But anyway, I've given you the best advice I can. Good luck to you, Ken. I think this is going to be easy. I think you'll probably say this is where we made our mistake, or we didn't do this right, or whatever. And you'll know if there's any damage to the motor, because it should drive nice. It should, the temperature gauge should be where it was before. It should start cold. It should start high, hot. It should fast idle when it's cold. All the things it did before, it should do again. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. Blackwell Automotive is a guy up at 40th Street and Greenway. He's more than a half a bubble off, but he works on vintage cars, and he works on family cars, and he works on motor homes, and he works on lots of different cars. He's really, really good at what he does. Him and I are very good friends, as are most of the guys that own the shops that I talk nice about. So if you're in the Northeast Phoenix area, the North Scottsdale area, there's only one shop up there that I can really put my stamp of approval on, and that's Blackwell Automotive, 40th Street and Greenway. Been around a long time, and he certainly knows what he's doing. When it comes to finding a good shop, you can certainly go in and Google the name of the shop and look at their reviews. And most of us, if not all of us, understand that you're never going to have perfect reviews unless your family calls in every day and has your nephews and nieces. And, you know, you can fiddle with the reviews a little bit. But even if you looked at my reviews, I've got people that hate me. I've got people that we've messed up their car. Usually when we messed up their car, we admit it. And if they give us a bad rating, we just say, yes, they had the reason to be mad at us because we messed it up. We did this. We did that. So those are the kinds of things that you have. But the shops that I recommend you to, here's the deal we have with them. They have to go through some kind of arbitration deal, like with the Better Business Bureau or something like that. They have to go in and have somebody look at the complaint if the two of them can't get together. But I want to tell you something. That arbitration process or mediation process hasn't happened in the last 10 years. The shops that I tell you about, I haven't had a complaint, and I'm just making it worse now. I haven't had a complaint on any of the shops in 10 years, in at least 10 years. It's because they know the difference between right and wrong. All of us make mistakes. All of us forget to do something. My shop is no different. At least once a week, we make a mistake. But we're processing 20 cars a day, like a lot of other shops are. So there's going to be a mistake. Sometimes we don't put the fan shroud on, or we leave a bolt out, or sometimes we have an oil leak on the valve cover that we took off, and we'll have to fix that. That happens. There's problems like that. But most of us are going to experience, you know, a problem like one car every 50 or one car every 70. It's not going to be one out of two. So good shops usually have that under control. 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open, so if you want to get in, now's the time. Gil's going to say hello. Do you want to talk to Mark? You say yes. He's going to say, what's your name? You give him your name, and that's it. And then he whispers in my ear, and he tells me, I want you to go to Bob or Bobby or David or Kevin or Sean, Shannon. And those are the names that he will give me, and whatever you tell him your name is. And that's how it works. 602-508-0960. Well, welcome back, everybody. 20 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, we have, let me see, 1, 2, 3 people waiting to talk. That means we have two lines available, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Real quick before we go to the calls, Larry Harker's Auto's at 38th Avenue and Indian School and has been since 1967. Bob runs the shop. Ellen runs the front. She's the one at the front counter. And don't think for a minute she doesn't know a lot about cars. She, like my wife, has been shoulder to shoulder with me and with Bob for more than 30, 40, 50 years. So it's a bad idea to walk into an auto repair shop and go face to face with some lady and pretend or talk as if she doesn't know anything about cars. Even my daughter, Andy, she's pretty doggone good. But Bob's been around a long time. They have the equipment to repair your car. They service and repair both foreign and domestic. So if you have a problem with a car and you're anywhere within about a 5 to 10 mile radius of Larry Harker's Auto, 38th Avenue and Indian School, I'm really proud to recommend them, and they're a really good shop. Mark, how are you today?
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
You bet.
I have a question about my 2002 Ford Ranger, 145,000 miles, got the 4-liter engine in it. And I have a cruise control question. The cruise control on the vehicle works perfect, just as it should. But whenever it's accelerating, I hear like a vibration or a rattling noise in the passenger compartment under the dash on the driver's side. And is there some kind of a relay or some component under there that's making that noise? As soon as I touch the brakes to turn off the cruise controller, once it gets up to speed, the sound stops. And then if it has to engage the engine and increase the velocity of the car again, it starts again.
Okay. You helped me out a lot there, because when you said when I disengage that speed, then it changes it. That helps me. What I want you to do is I want you to pay attention about your creature environment settings in the car. I'm talking about air conditioning and heater. And I want you to see if that has anything to do with it. So if you're using your air and you have this problem, I want you to shut the air off. I want you to leave everything else alone and see. Because the rattling noise can come from the compressor that's cycling on and off. And if it's...
Yeah, it happened. I'm sorry.
If it happens year-round... Go ahead.
It doesn't matter if the air is on or off or heater or anything.
Okay.
It happens all the time, all year round.
Okay. And then what about speed limit? What speed arena are we in, or what RPM are we in?
I can't relate it to RPMs, but it'll happen when I'm going 30 miles an hour or 45. It doesn't seem to be related to the speed of the car.
Okay. But it could be related to the speed of the engine. So what I hear you saying is I'm in cruise control. I'm using cruise control. And there are times when I get this rattling noise underneath the passenger side of the dash, near the passenger side dashboard. I'm getting this rattling noise when I'm in cruise control, and I know that it's throttling up. Did I get it right?
Actually, it's on the driver's side.
Okay.
Down just under the left-hand side where the steering column goes in.
Okay. I've never seen this before. I've never had this happen before. I don't know. I mean, it's one of those that I'm quite sure anybody with gray hair would be able to, if you took them for a ride and said, I'm going to drive first and then you're going to drive second. But here's what I want you to do. When it happens, I want you to manually shift out of overdrive and go into drive.
Okay.
And I want to know if it changes. Because if the motor is pinging, because you said something about maybe using the cruise control at 30 or 40 miles an hour, that motor is lugging at that point. It's like it's in fifth gear and you're throttling out of, you know, a slight incline. And I'm wondering if you're hearing the engine ping through the firewall on that side of the car. So if you say, Mark, when it happens at 38 miles an hour, I set the cruise at 38 or 45 or whenever the heck it is, and I take my shifter and I pull it down one gear, the noise immediately goes away, then I'm going to ask you, I don't want you to set it below 50 anymore. I don't want you to use it below 50. And I want to know if that noise is there after 50. And you say, no, it's not. Then we're lugging the motor. It's kind of like shifting to fourth gear when you should be in second.
Okay.
I think that's it. But it's still worth. Now, another thing that could be happening is the air conditioning can be cycling on and off. And you said no creature comforts is on at that point, right?
Correct.
Okay. What part of town do you live in?
We're in Gilbert.
Okay. I would just, I mean, if you have a regular shop and you know you can do it, I like it this way. The guy comes into the shop, and it's not on Monday morning or Friday afternoon, and he comes into the shop and he says, hey, Mark, he says, I've got this noise and I can make it happen. Mark, I'm not going to have your technician for the next 2 hours while I try to make it happen. I can make it happen all the time. I was wondering, could I borrow one? I'm happy to sit in your lobby. I'm just going to leave the car running outside, but can I borrow one of your technicians, and I promise not to have them for more than 15 minutes? I can make it happen going around the block, because I already just checked to make sure I could do that. Whew, I'm going to hop over the counter and hug you, because that's what I want to hear.
Yeah, I can definitely do that.
Okay?
Okay. All right, thank you.
All right, good luck to you. Thank you. Roger, you're up next.
Hey, I just a couple weeks ago acquired a 2012 Jeep Liberty, and really in pristine condition. I mean, there's not a scratch on it or anything. 125,000 miles, and I did a fairly long road trip in it. Loved the vehicle, but the very obvious thing I noticed was the gas mileage was like 17, 18 miles a gallon. Do you think that's probably what that thing would average?
Well,
or is it time to maybe get a tune-up and fuel system cleaned and that sort of thing?
Well, here's what I'm thinking. You didn't say a word about the check engine light. You didn't say a word about snow and rotten eggs. You didn't say anything about any kind of drivability or performance or engine miss or shuttering or missing. I know.
I love the vehicle.
Okay. That 12 has some pretty sophisticated computers in it. And if there's something that's outside a range of a very small window, it's going to turn on the check engine light. And you don't have that either.
Okay.
And so I don't know. What was the fuel economy you got? 12 and a half?
No. It was like 17.
Oh.
And that was on the highway.
Okay.
And it is kind of a boxy vehicle.
Yeah. Which motor did you get? Do you know?
It's a six-cylinder.
Okay, the V6. Yeah. Okay. And were you in cruise control a lot, or were you driving it by foot?
I would say more cruise than anything.
Okay. I don't know that I'd be real concerned with that. Let's turn it around just slightly. If it's running rich, you're going to smell rotten eggs every time you get out of the car. If you smell rotten eggs, then we're running fuel out the tailpipe, and you can get better fuel economy. If the check engine light comes on and it has an O2 sensor code, oftentimes those are related to poor fuel economy. But if you would have turned the question around and said, I got a V6, it's got 126,000 miles on it, 125,000 miles on it, what kind of fuel economy should I be getting? I would say, depending on your right foot, between 15 and 20. That's what I would have said. and your 17 is in the middle of that. So in the absence of anything else, yes, a fresh set of spark plugs. If you wanted to make a guess, yes, a fresh set of properly gapped spark plugs would be a step in the right direction. But pull one first and look at it, because they may already been changed. So just pull one, look at it. If it looks old, replace them all. But yes, that's a good idea. I'm sorry, that's all I can give you right now. Steve, you stay right there, because I'll be back in about 3 minutes. Everybody, 34 minutes after the hour. And Kate, can you hold it down over there? If you can hear that noise in the background, my German Shepherd that's in my office right now in the radio studio was scratching, and I forgot to take off her chain around her neck, and all of her tags are there. And now she's intently looking at a very big lizard crawling across the grass outside. So she'll be tied up for a while, and that's good for me. Anyway, 602-508-0960. If you have a car question or a car problem, the lines are, there's four of them open, 602-508-0960. And right now I'm going to talk to Steve. Steve, thank you for holding through the break. How can I help you?
Hi, Mark. Enjoy your show.
Thank you.
I have a question. 2006 Ford F-250 6-liter diesel. It's kind of slow starting. We're going to get one glow plug replaced, but I was looking for a high torque starter. When I say slow starting, it's kind of slow to turn over and also slow to when it does turn over to start. And so I was trying to see if there's a high torque diesel, high torque starter for that engine. But I see a lot of places that looks like a 6.4 starter will work on that. Do you have any experience in that area?
Well, what I would do is I would get part numbers for both of them, and I would call the local Ford dealership or get on the Ford website and see if the numbers are the same. So if you go look at the 6-liter and then you look at a 6.4 and they both have the same Ford starter, then the answer to your question is okay. But before you do that, do you have a voltmeter?
We do, yes.
Okay. Have you checked the voltage during the cranking mode?
Have not.
Okay. I need the batteries, and you have two batteries underneath the hood, right?
Correct.
Okay. I need the batteries independent of one another, should be at 13 volts when you do this testing, because the fully charged battery is around 13 volts. So you're going to just, and they're connected in parallel, so if you put your meter on one, you're really putting them on both. So put your meter on there and see where you start. And I don't want to see the voltage drop anything below 9.6 is kind of the no-go zone. But I'm telling you that if it starts at 13, I don't want to see it drop below 11. And if it drops below 11, I think you got a battery problem as opposed to a starter problem. Now, if you want, you can go and you can call around and find somebody who has an inductive amp probe and then ask them what an electrical systems test is on your car, on your diesel. And I think most of us are in the $25 to $50 range. And we're going to check voltage at idle, voltage with the idle up, just the draw on the starter hot, the draw on the starter cold, shorts and draws, and voltage. We need about 14 volts out of the alternator when the idle's brought up without anything on, by the way. We bring the idle up, and we want to see 14 volts at the positive and negative cable of either one of the two batteries. I suggest that you probably have a problem somewhere else. Now, in addition to that, we do a volt drop test where we keep our positive on the positive cable, but our negative, we touch the engine, the alternator bracket, the fender, the core support, the front bumper. Every single place we put the negative terminal, every one of those should be the same. 13.1, 13.1, 13.1, 13.2 is okay. 13.1. That's called a volt drop test. And if, and you see, the negative battery cable usually goes to the engine, but the engine has to have a cable that takes it, because it sits in rubber. It has to have a cable that goes to the frame. Then the frame has a cable that goes to the body. So if we're missing one of those grounds, you're going to have problems. So before you jump into a $300 or $400 starter swap, maybe have your do yourself with your digital voltometer or have somebody do an electrical systems test to make sure everything's okay.
Okay. Similar quick question. If you had a bad glow plug at this time of the year, is that still going to make it not start as quickly?
No, one glow plug on that 6 liter, that 6 liter is a V8, right?
Correct, yes.
Yeah. One glow plug is not going to make a doggone bit of difference. You're not going to see any problem.
Okay.
Now, can you see the glow plugs?
I know it's number two. It's on a code on number two.
Okay. Do you have a temperature gun?
We do, yes.
Okay. So maybe turn the key on and then gun all eight of the glow plugs. I think if you found number two cold and all the rest of them were 200 or 300 degrees, then you'd say, okay, it looks like that. But really and truly, we've had Fords come in and they've had more than one glow plug that isn't working and they didn't even come in for a problem.
1 minute.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I'm not quite sure that one glow plug is going to – I'm not sure you're going to notice one glow plug, but I'm going to defer to guys like Nate over at Strictly Diesel that works on a lot more Ford diesels than we do. We do lots of Ford diesel work, but we do lots of ads. We do suspensions and tires and wheels and exhaust and modifications for performance. Normal maintenance, but I feel pretty confident in saying I don't think you'd forget the engine light. If the engine light wasn't there, you probably wouldn't notice that there's a difference. But I've been wrong before, and if I am, call me and tell me. Okay?
Yeah, it's just become more of an issue now because it's got to go through emission, so it's filling a code on that glow plug.
Well,
we'll have to figure it out.
Yeah, your temperature gun will tell you if it's lighting or not, and then you can take the circuit off and see if you've got power and ground at the circuit. You can use your digital voltometer. It's not that difficult to kind of diagnose this.
Okay.
All
right, sounds good. Thank you.
You betcha. Alrighty, 602-508-0960. If you have a car question, 602-508-0960. Ladies are first, so husband, you can have you can ask your wife to call in. And then with her female voice, she gets moved to the front of the line. And then when I say, hello, Sally, how can I help you? You can go, hello, this is Bob, her husband. That's the easy way to get in first. Bye. Minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. If you have a car question, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Two people are in front of you. But before we talk about that, I need to talk about Kurt's Auto Repair at I-17 and Bell Road in Phoenix, northeast corner, Bell and I-17. I can't tell you how many times I have sent a customer who had a problem, a question, a concern to Kurt's. And Kurt's, for whatever reason, has a magic wand. and actually it's his staff. Kurt and his staff are really, really good. They do everything from lawnmowers to diesels. They can, and best part about many of the shops on my best car repair shop list, if we're not the best shop, we'll send you to who is, or if we don't do that work well, then we'll just tell you that. We're not the right shop for your car. And that's what you want. You don't want anybody to guess. So if you're anywhere in the area of I-17 and Bell Road and you don't have a repair shop, Kurt's with a C. C-U-R-T-S, Kurt's Auto Repair, is the place I would suggest you go. Joel, you're up. How can I help you?
Yes, so I've got a pin leak in my radiator, and I'm not going to be able to have the radiator replaced for about 3-4 weeks. Would you suggest, or how those radiator stop leaks, to use those temporarily until... I can replace it. Is that something that works, or would you recommend something like that?
Yeah, yeah. AlumaSeal is one of my favorite ones. But here's what the problem is. The problem is men, you and me, we don't read the directions and we don't follow the directions. We take the radiator cap off, throw it in there, and we want it to work. I need you to follow the directions. But the small pinhole will be taken care of by any top-notch leak. You can go into the auto parts store and you just say, which one of your radiator leak sauces do you sell the most of? Well, this one right over here, this is the big dog right here, then take that one. But just follow the directions, and if it says put it in and then go drive it for 20 minutes at highway speed, then go drive it 20 minutes at highway speed. If it says turn the heater on, turn the heater on. So just follow the directions. But, yes, there's three or four different brands out there that will work just fine.
Okay, and it's something that's really meant to be a temporary fix, correct?
No, it depends on where the leak's at, on whether it's going to be a temporary or a permanent fix. But most of the time, that can be a permanent fix. I would say 70% of the time, with a small pinhole leak where a tube is leaking where it goes into the header plate of the radiator, 9 out of 10 times, that will be a permanent leak. And permanent is defined, everything's okay for the next 6 months.
Okay, gotcha.
Okay.
Second question is, I do have one other question, and that's when it comes to premium gas versus regular, I'm thinking about, my daughter's got a 128 BMW that my ex-wife got for her, and so I'm wondering, with gas being, you know, what it is now, whether or not it makes a difference if she was to put regular versus premium, even though the owner's manual and everything suggests premium.
Okay, I can answer that for you real quick. The answer is you can't tell, your daughter can't tell, neither can I tell. If we were to do a really blind taste test, if we were to empty the tank and just put 3 gallons of premium in it and then empty the tank and put 3 gallons of unleaded, you couldn't tell the difference. Your wife couldn't tell the difference. Your ex-wife, your daughter couldn't tell the difference. None of my technicians could tell the difference. I am against the idea that you sell a car and you present this car as something that's very special that can only use premium fuel. That's a bunch of bull... And it's always been that way. Now, let me explain. In an exaggerated way, regular, one molecule ignites 100, 100 ignite 1,000, 1,000 ignite 10,000. The burn is very fast. It's a boom, like that, okay? Premium, in an exaggerated way, just for demonstration purposes, the boom is now a boom. You see how long that was? We're talking in milliseconds of time. So the push, the explosion, lasts 1/1,000,000th of a second longer with premium. So it's not going to make any difference. You can't tell. Your wife can't tell. Your daughter's not going to be able to tell. Put regular. Hunt the cheapest gas you can find. Now, when my wife had a Jaguar with a blower on it, we put regular in it, and everybody made fun of us, and that car's still on the road. So I'm just telling you, I practice what I preach. The only car I own that I put premium in is a twin-turboed Z01 Corvette. I can't afford to not put premium in it. It only gets driven 3,000 miles a year. It's a monster motor. It's a 180-mile-an-hour car. I don't want to take the risk, but all the other cars in my family, we buy the cheapest gas we can find. Okay?
All right. And then I want to thank you for one thing. In February of 2019, I was driving my Kia down the I-10. My engine seized, unbeknownst to me, that that's what had happened, right off of I-10 and Elliott. I took it to your shop, and you guys said, yep, engine seized, you need a new motor, and you guys looked it up, and you said, well, it looks like Kia may have some kind of a recall on it. Well, why don't you have it towed over there, see, maybe they'll take care of it, and they ended up replacing my motor. So thank you very much for that.
Thank you. I'm very proud of you. Choke me up. I'm very proud of my staff because they all believe what my wife and I and my daughter Andy and my son, we all believe. Let's do what's best for the customer in front of us, not what's best for us. So I'm very proud of my staff. So thank you very much for your compliment. Thank you. Thank you very much. Okay, Charlie, you're up next. How can I help you?
Yeah, hi. Good morning, Mark. Thanks for taking the call. I've got a 14 VW Passat. 112,000 miles on it. The EPC light, electronic power control, has come on twice, say, in the last 10 days. I shut the engine off, turn it on again, no problem. Shut it off, turn it on again, no problem. And last time I saw this was maybe 10 days ago, and I've been driving the car fine ever since. I'm wondering if this is, A, something I should be concerned about, and, B, if I took it to a shop, would plugging in the OBD give me a clue as to why that's coming on?
Okay, I'm going to give you a stopgap measure first. I want you to go to O'Reilly's and AutoZone or
got it, yep.
Any one of the rest of them. And you say, I have a check engine light on, and I understand you can plug into my car, and then you can give me a piece of paper that kind of says what it might be. What I'm looking for is I'm looking for, every once in a while, this green wire located at this portion underneath the hood gets loose, so we want you to check that connection, or we want you to do this, or a low fluid level will cause this, or a high fluid level will cause this. Let's just do a cursory look at it first. As far as it, you don't have any drivability symptoms, and like you said, you're going to have
none. None.
Yeah, you have to have a clean, you can't have a check engine light or a history of a check engine light to go through emissions. But I think that is worth your time just to see.
Okay.
Because there's lots of times that the check engine light comes on. As a matter of fact, I got a check engine light on my truck that's coming on and I don't even care. But I do know it's a EGR code on it. And I know that, I probably know what it is and I'll fix it when I get time and it's not going to hurt me anything and blah, blah, blah. But I would do that just to see but don't spend a bunch of money guessing either. So I don't want the guys at the auto parts store to say, oh, I know what that is. If you buy this $625 part here, it'll fix it. Don't do that. Don't do that.
Right. So. Right. Well, is the EPC the same as the check engine light? Because I've also got, there is a check engine light on the car. It has never come on, but the EPC is kind of like a different than a check engine light. So
are they both yellow?
It says there's something wrong with the throttle system.
Okay.
I'm colorblind, man. It shines.
Okay. Well, it's the color means everything. We used to have green 100 years ago, and then we went to yellow and orange, and then obviously red is red, and red means stop, and says now, not tomorrow, not next mile, now. So that's what it really depends on. Do you have a shop that that you've had your VW Passat in before?
Well, the dealer, I'm not wild about that. If you know of a good VW honest mechanic in the Desert Ridge area, that would really be helpful.
Okay, Desert Ridge, give me major cross streets.
That's 101 and Arizona 51 on the north side of town.
Okay. Harker's Auto 38. Do you work anywhere else? Do you work downtown?
I'm retired.
Okay. Go to marksalem.com. I can tell you that I'm going to step out on a limb and say every one of the shops on my list could fix that problem. They can diagnose it and fix it. The question is
right.
do I have to fix it? That's the question. So go to marksalem.com, go to the best car repair shops link, and then it'll give you a map of where all the shops are. But I think Harker is closest to you. But the 51, yeah, you're going to be kind of close to quite a few shops up there. Blackwell's up there at 40th and Greenway.
Yeah, I know him, yep.
Well, Blackwell, just go over there and tell him to Bill. Just say to him, hey, Bill Mark Salem. He's just said Bill him for the repair. And of course, I'm not going to pay for the repair, but he'll call me, and then I get to toot his horn a little bit. But
Okay.
Blackwell's capable of looking at that for you.
Okay, terrific. Good. So is this something I should, well, not be worried about, I guess, because it's just more of an annoyance, but I'm taking a long trip, and I just want to be sure.
I'd probably at least have it identified and looked at the possibilities before you took the long trip. Remember, yellow means caution. It doesn't mean stop. And there's lots of people that will admit that they've gone to Colorado and they've gone to Dallas, Texas with a check engine light on and had no, you know, they didn't have any breakdowns and everything else. So it's not a good
idea. One other quick point about...
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. One other quick point about this car is that it's got a... where it slows the engine down when this thing comes on. I mean, where it's like clearly... It won't let you drive it at like a super high speed.
Okay.
So some kind of governor...
Okay, I think what's going on here is that it's seeing some tailpipe emissions it doesn't like, and it's identified, for instance, it might be cylinder number 3. So what it's going to do is take cylinder number 3 away, or it's going to take the injector away and say, we're not going to pump any more fuel into that cylinder because we've got a problem. I'm using just a simplistic example. Maybe it's a situation where it's seeing a whole bunch of pinging going on, and so the computer's going to start backing off the timing. It's going to give you substandard performance when the computer takes control of the timing and starts backing off the timing. So the computer is doing what it can to save you from catastrophe. But again, if the light is yellow, then that isn't something that's bad. Red means stop and get help now. But yellow is altogether different.
Got it.
Okay?
Hey, I'll run by Bill Blackwell. Thanks a lot for the advice, Mark. I really like your show.
Thank you very much. There's a couple of other people in town that are just special. If you have a diesel, Nate at Strictly Diesel is one of the best diesel guys I've ever met. He's at I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road in North Scottsdale. It's Strictly Diesel service and repair Monday through Friday. They sell parts 24 hours a day on their website. But Nate is just really a good guy. First of all, he must be 8 feet tall. His hands look like tennis rackets, and when he shakes your hand, he engulfs your whole hand as if you were a 6-year-old child with your hand in an adult man's palm. He's very good at listening, and he'll always call you back. So if you call and say, hey, I know it's Monday morning, I know Nate's busy, but could he call me and I have a question? I'm prepared to ask him the question quickly, and maybe he can give me an answer. But Nate's a good guy, so that's Strictly Service and Diesel Service and Repair. On the other side of the valley, Thompson's Auto Repair handles Mesa for me. Thompson's has been around since Jesus was a baby. Thompson's goes back to the old Shell stations and the old Union 76 stations, the Thompson and the Vivian family. This is a marriage of the both families at Thompson's Auto Repair that's been around since 1970 at Main Street just east of Stapley. Brian and Thelma came from those two families. Those two kids were born and raised with daddies and mothers that smelled like gasoline at the dinner table. They go back to the 60s and the 70s. So Brian and Thelma know the difference between right and wrong. So if you're in Mesa and Gilbert and Apache Junction, the only shop in that area that I can recommend is Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing.
1 minute.
I'd like to recommend more, but the filter I have is pretty tight. And I'm pretty picky about who I take. And I do constantly watch the shops on my list for bad reviews and pattern failures and stuff like that. Most of us have complaints, and I'm raising my hand because you can go to my shop and look at my shop, and I have complaints as well. We're not going to please everybody, but hopefully everybody's in the 4-star area, and that's certainly a very normal one. So my email address is mark@marksalem.com. If you have a question or a problem, then you're welcome to send me an email. I personally answer all of them, but I would appreciate you giving me a phone number. I can call you back from my blocked cell phone. A lot of times I have questions, and I'd like to ask you the questions, and I'd like to do it now. And I'll call, and it'll say block number, and you either answer or don't. But I'll always answer your questions. So mark@marksalem.com. Please drive safely, and see you next Saturday. This